I'd like to thank Al for choosing that song. It's very appropriate with the theme of our lesson this evening, which is on peer pressure. Do you ever stop and think why people sin? There's a lot of different reasons. Sometimes it's just out of ignorance. Sometimes it's just for the pleasure of that which the sin brings. Addiction could be unconcern. Weakness causes some sin, moral weakness, that the idea of lack of virtue, just the courage not to be able to say no, that we just give in to temptation. But some sins are a little bit different. They are a result of Christians failing to heed what Paul tells us to do in Romans chapter 12. He tells us there that we're not to conform to the world. And there's certainly a lot of pressure to conform to the world. And that's nothing new. It's been that way ever since Adam and Eve. I think Adam felt a little bit of that pressure. Eve had eaten of the fruit that she wasn't to eat, and she pressured him into eating as well. We use the term peer pressure today to describe some of that, at least. You know, we usually think of peer pressure in terms of our teenage years, our years when we're younger and we're more subject to that sort of thing. And I think there's an element of truth there, but peer pressure knows no age boundary. We're all affected by it. Now, peer pressure is interesting because it can be positive or it can be negative. We usually think of it in a negative way. But we'll find out in the course of this lesson that peer pressure can be positive, and that's why one of the reasons why we're gathered here this evening. We're here to encourage one another, to admonish one another. We're exerting peer pressure on one another, we might say, only we're doing it in a positive way. So again, there's two possible directions for peer pressure, a positive direction or a good direction, where we encourage one another to do the right thing. In Proverbs 13 and verse 20, he who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Negative or evil aspect of peer pressure, we're encouraged by others or pressured by others to do that which is wrong. In 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, I think that's what Paul was addressing. He said, be not deceived. Evil companionships corrupt good morals. So there's the idea of pressuring someone to do that which is wrong. Well, those that we associate with are going to determine in a large part whether we're subject more to positive peer pressure or negative peer pressure. But unfortunately, we live in a world where we are forced to associate with people of the world. So as we go through this lesson, we need to take away an important theme that even though we live in the world, we are not of the world. Now let's look at the sources of peer pressure first. There are a lot of different sources. Obvious one is our companions. We just read from 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 that we need to be careful who we choose as our companions, because evil companions corrupt good morals. We read from Psalm 1 and verse 1 in our reading, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. I think the idea there is pretty plain, that we're not to associate with evil people when we obviously don't have to do that. But sometimes, unfortunately, in our jobs and school and so forth, we have to do that. So we all need to be really, really careful of the companions we choose. And especially parents here tonight, that is an extremely important thing that you need to do for your children, is keep tabs on who they are associating with. When I was young, my parents didn't do that for me. And I'm not necessarily placing 100% of the blame on them, but I ran with the wrong crowd, got in with the wrong people, and it had a very negative effect on my life. And looking back on it, I hope I don't think I made the same mistake that they made when I raised Ryan, and I think I'm doing the same thing with Dawn, and I keep track of the people that they are associating with to help them not make some of the same mistakes that I made. So some of the most important choices we make in life are going to be the people that we choose to be around. Our friends, then the most important one is our spouse. I always say the second most important choice that you'll ever make in your life is the person you choose to marry. The first important choice is whether or not you choose to be a Christian. And then secondly, you need to choose someone as your spouse that will help you get to heaven. And I would aim this at the young people that are not married. Don't be fooled into choosing someone as your spouse just because they're a Christian. Make sure that they're a faithful Christian. Make sure that being a Christian to them is something that's very, very important, the most important thing in their life. Also, in regards to peer pressure and choosing our companions, is choosing an employer. We need to be extremely careful there, because an employer can exert a tremendous amount of influence in our lives for a number of reasons. Some of those reasons are not good reasons. As we look at the Bible, we can see that one of the reasons why peer pressure is so important to pay attention to is, and I learned this when I was a young person in a negative way, that if we run with the wrong people, we will do things under their influence that we would have never done on our own. And take that message home. That is really, really important. We can see that in Joseph's brothers. In Genesis chapter 37, they conspired to kill Joseph. Judah talked them out of it, but it wasn't good what he talked them into. He said, "Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. And let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh." And then the next small phrase really sums it up. And his brothers listened. They were influenced by that peer pressure, we might say. Another case is in 2 Samuel 13. You remember the story about Amnon, one of David's sons, who raped his own half-sister, Tamar. He was influenced by his cousin, Jonadab, and the Bible describes him as a very crafty man. He saw Amnon pining over this young lady and basically talked him into doing what is evil. And that's one of the bad things about peer pressure. You can be talked into doing things that you would not have done if you had been simply on your own. So our companions are sources of peer pressure. We can be involved in a false religion, and that becomes a source of peer pressure. It was a source of peer pressure in John chapter 9. You remember in John 9, the man that had been born blind, Jesus healed him. Remember, he made the took his spit, mixed it with clay, and rubbed it on the blind man's eyes and told him to go wash in the pool of Siloam, and he did, and he gained his sight. You remember his parents. Of course, the fact that Jesus healed him on the Sabbath, this absolutely positively drove the Pharisees and so forth crazy. And they were determined to punish Jesus for that. And one of the things they did was to attack his parents. And you remember what pressure they brought to bear on them? If you don't tell us the truth here, we're going to throw you out of the synagogue. So false religion can have a tremendous amount of pressure on people. I know over the years there's been people that I've tried to teach the truth, and I believe that I'm making progress. And they'll go back and they'll talk to some of the members of their denominational church or their pastor, and they put pressure on them to reject the truth. And that's very strong. Even preachers can be affected by peer pressure. Turn over to 2 Timothy. I would be the first to admit that there's been times in my preaching that I felt this kind of pressure. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, a very familiar passage, Paul charges Timothy in verse 1, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing in his kingdom, preach the word. Be ready in season, out of season, convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. Okay, now Paul's going to tell Timothy why he charges him to preach in that manner. Because verse 3 starts with the word for, or because, or this is why I'm telling you this. The time will come when they, that's Christians unfortunately, will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. So, unfortunately, there's a tendency among Christians to want preachers to preach only that which they want to hear. And I know I've been in situations where I didn't compromise the truth, but I knew that when I preached what I was going to preach, it was going to cause trouble. And that's not a pleasant thing, but it's something nonetheless that we can't back away from the truth. We have to preach the word, whether it's going to be received well or not. Pressure to please men can be really, really strong. We see that in Galatians chapter 2 with an apostle, the apostle Peter. He knew that God was not partial, that God had accepted the Gentiles. Yet when he went to Antioch, before the brethren from Jerusalem, the Jewish brethren came up there, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, it was a whole different story. He was pressured. He succumbed to that peer pressure. And even Barnabas, it says in verse 13, was carried away with their hypocrisy. So if somebody that's an apostle, somebody that is empowered by the Holy Spirit, can cave into peer pressure, then certainly I need to beware, because I'm not above them, that's for certain. Another important source of peer pressure is our own family. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 10. In Matthew 10, beginning in verse 34, Jesus says, I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's foes will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it. So our own family can bring negative pressure to bear upon us that would try to put a stumbling block in our way as a Christian. I know when I first became a Christian, nobody in my family that was a Christian, and I would say probably for at least the first 6 to 9 months, or maybe even a year, it absolutely drove my family crazy that I went to services every Sunday. I unfortunately couldn't go on Wednesday night because I worked night shifts, but I was there on Sunday morning and Sunday evening, regardless, and that drove them crazy. They just couldn't understand that, and there were a lot of times that they put a lot of pressure on me not to go, but finally, when I made it clear over a number of months that they would not be successful in that, they quit doing it. But that pressure was strong. Some people refuse to obey the gospel because of family pressure, both from the living and from the dead. I've taught people, and they just can't get over the fact that, you know, mom or dad or some important person in their life who's now deceased didn't obey the gospel, and they cannot reconcile the fact that they're probably lost. And, you know, I try to get over the idea that it's not up to us to make that decision. It's God's decision, and whatever decision he makes will be the right one. So it should have no influence whatsoever on their obedience, but unfortunately, some people let that stand in their way. I've also seen some Christians that will cave into their family when the family comes for a visit, and the people visiting are not Christians. Well, you know, they just drop in at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and you know, we need to go to services. We need to be there at 5 o'clock, and they just don't have the spiritual courage to say, you know, glad you came, but you know, 30, we have to leave to go to services now. And now I have a message for children and wives. Children need to respect and obey their parents. That's what the Bible says. Ephesians 6, verses 1 to 3. Wives need to be submissive to their husbands. Ephesians 5 and verse 22. But don't follow your parents' or your spouse's bad habits. If they have habits, if they do things that are contrary to God's word, if they're not Christians, or they're at times unfaithful Christians, don't follow their bad habits. You're not under obligation to do that. In fact, just as the opposite. In fact, you need to set a good example for them if they're not living as they should. And then finally, in that regard, and this is really important, make sure that your faith is your faith. You know, we need to listen to our parents. We need to follow our parents' good example. If our parents believe and practice the truth, we need to follow that. Not just because our parents do it, but because it's the right way. But we need to make sure that we're just not follow blindly. We need to make sure that our faith is indeed our own faith. Another source of peer pressure can be our employer. I think Joseph felt a little peer pressure, didn't he, from his employer. And, you know, we all know that we have to make a living to support our family. That's, for example, 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8. If we don't provide for our own, Paul said, we're worse than an infidel. So it's a natural thing when we're on the job to want to please our employer. You know, we want to keep that job. We would like to get a promotion or a raise or whatever. But we can't sell our souls to do things that are wrong in order to get those things. We want to get along with our co-workers. I worked for 3 years in a factory. And they talk about how sailors can curse. Well, factory workers, I think, give them a good run for their money. And the job I had, at least for part of the time, I was an inspector, so it was a manufacturing plant, and I had to go around to various machines as these people did various operations on these parts and inspect them to make sure that they were according to specifications. So I got around to see everybody, and you can imagine if you have a job where you're tied to this machine for 8, 9, 10, 12 hours a day, and somebody comes to visit you, they want to talk. But unfortunately, a lot of their talk was filthy language, dirty jokes, dirty stories, and that sort of thing. And it was hard at first, but you know, I finally got across the notion that I didn't like to listen to those things. And fortunately, most of them got the message and stopped doing that type of thing. But there's a lot of pressure there. Another thing that was a lot of pressure in that job was, it was amazing the amount of stealing that went on. I mean, these guys would sneak out all kinds of things from the factory in their lunchbox. And sometimes I wonder, well, why are you taking that? It doesn't seem to be very valuable to me. But they would steal things, and that made it difficult as well. Probably the thing that was one of the most difficult things was people would get on me for working too hard, doing too much, you know, slow down. Everybody wanted to do what I called the slow walk in their job, you know. And I can't imagine really why, because the time goes a lot faster when you're busy, and when you're continually looking for a way to goof off, it just makes the time drag. But that was part of the peer pressure that was brought to bear. I know I had a friend that actually ran one of these machines, and he was a Christian, and he really felt the pressure in that regard, because they were paid what's called piecework. You know, the more pieces that they were able to run through their machine in a shift, then they got paid more for that. But when they would do that, when they would really get at it, you know, then the people that kept track of all that, they were like, you know, how can this person be so much more productive than these other people? And they would want to come and change they would want to do what's called a time study and change the piece rate. And that really would upset people. So we need to be careful that we don't allow our need to make a living to destroy our soul. In Matthew 6 and verse 33, God is going to provide for our needs. But he says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Well, another source of peer pressure can be the government. Government certainly put a lot of pressure, and the government officials and co-workers put a lot of pressure on Daniel and his three friends, didn't they? But they didn't cave to that pressure. In 2 Samuel, we have the case of Uriah. Remember, David hatched the plan that gave the plan to Joab, the general. You know, you need to put Uriah in the front lines of the battle, in the heat of the battle, then have his fellow soldiers withdraw from him so that he would be killed. You know, I think one of the things that we leave out of the story are those soldiers that caved in to that pressure and abandoned Uriah when he's in the heat of battle. So there was a tremendous amount of pressure on them to do that, and unfortunately they gave in. Now, I don't feel a lot of peer pressure in my life, but who knows what kind of pressure we might face as Christians in the near future. Al mentioned it this morning, that because of the inaction of the Supreme Court, that same-sex marriage is now legal in the state of Indiana. I plan on, in the coming months at some point in time, to preach a lesson on homosexuality. And I expect Ken to post that on the website. And who knows who might be surfing the net, see that article, and then 100 people show up in our parking lot on Sunday morning protesting against us. Something like that could happen. It has happened already at some places. I don't think it's happened at a Church of Christ that I know of, but certainly some of the mainline denominations have been subject to that peer pressure. Unfortunately, in nearly every case that I know of, they've caved into it and given in. So what if that takes place here, where they try to put that pressure on us? Are we going to cave in, or are we going to stand for the truth? I hope the latter rather than the former. Another source of peer pressure, especially for our young people, is school. If you openly live as a Christian, that you have wholesome moral views, you're going to be subject to a lot of peer pressure in school. Even if you're just conservative-minded, you're going to be subject to a lot of peer pressure. Jonathan, maybe you've heard this story. I don't know what college it was, but I read a story, a news story about a young Republican group on a campus of a college. And in order for a group to be legitimized on that college campus, they had to have a sponsor from the faculty. And they had a real difficult time finding one of the faculty members that would sponsor this young Republican group because they were conservative in their outlook. And the thing that really got to me was that the administrators, once they did find a sponsor, said, okay, you can have your group, but every member of your group has to attend sensitivity training. I was glad to hear that they didn't cave into that, and they protested that, and then over a period of time, they finally won their case. But there's so many things that are taught in our school systems. Pressure is brought to bear on our young people. Evolution, homosexuality, premarital sex, legalized marijuana, all kinds of things like that. And students are in a very vulnerable position, especially if your teacher is a proponent of those things and you're against those things, you may receive a bad grade because of that. But nonetheless, we have to stand for what is right. Unfortunately, some teachers or professors can be really condescending and demeaning when it comes to these things. Try to force their views on students by trying to belittle them and make them look small, stupid, ignorant, and that sort of thing. So our values as Christians are under attack, and I don't see anything on the horizon that says that it's going to get any better anytime soon. So we cannot cave into these people. Plus, when it comes to these things, you know, we need to realize that these things that they're trying to force on our children are twisted and demented. They're wrong. They're sinful. And we need to stand up for our rights. We may even, as parents, have to sometimes go into school and protest certain things when they occur. And for our older students, you know, these professors are not nearly as smart as they would like you to believe. That's one thing that I learned over the years working for universities, is that they're not nearly as smart as they want you to think. In fact, John and I were talking in the foyer this morning about Mr. Dawkins, the Englishman who's written a lot of anti-Christian things, and I've read some of his material, and I can guarantee it's not nearly as smart as he thinks, because it's very easy to refute that which he writes. So don't be intimidated. Fortunately, there are a lot of very smart people intellectually that they might not be Christians in the sense of New Testament Christians as we know it from the Bible, but they believe in God. And there is a lot of good material out there that we can read and study and overthrow those arguments of people like Richard Dawkins. Well, another source of peer pressure is society in general. Nowadays, young people are mocked if they're a virgin. The idea of 1 Corinthians 6 and 14 is laughed at in our society. And 1 Corinthians 6:18 says, flee fornication. Our society flees fornication. They flee to it. They don't flee away from it. So young people, again, pointing the message to you, one of the most precious gifts that you can give your potential spouse is your sexual purity. Hebrews 13 and verse 4, marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. It's It's important from a moral and spiritual standpoint, tremendously important. But it's also important from a physical standpoint. There are so many diseases today that, you know, it's pretty easy to catch one of those if you're not morally pure. Society in general, if you don't support abortion, you're what? You're anti-woman. It drives me crazy, this certain side of our political spectrum is always talking about the war on women. Well, the war on women is being waged by those people, not by people on the conservative side of these issues. It's just the opposite. If we don't celebrate homosexuality and same-sex marriage, this one I've been reading lately, and it really bothers me. They say, you're on the wrong side of history. So that's bringing pressure to bear. Who wants to be on the wrong side of history? You know, the people that were on the wrong side of history in the civil rights movement, you know, I grant that those people were on the wrong side of history, but this is an entirely different issue. Another thing that bothers me is the word homophobic. What is a phobia? You're afraid of something. I'm not afraid of homosexuals, but I'm not going to stop preaching that homosexuality is a sin. The Bible talks about the crowd as being a source of peer pressure. And this kind of is something that is common to all of these sources of peer pressure. Exodus 23 and verse 2, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. It's amazing that 9 chapters later, what do the children of Israel do? They follow a crowd to do evil. What did they do? They made the golden calves. So they succumbed to the peer pressure. So don't underestimate the power of a crowd or a group to influence your behavior. And again, people will do things under the influence of a group or a crowd that they would never do as an individual. Don't ever forget that. Another thing is that the majority, this is not universal, but it's almost universal, the majority are usually what? They're usually wrong, and they're not very often are they right. Well, remember we said that peer pressure can be positive or negative. So here are some of the evil aspects of peer pressure. Sin arises from peer pressure. That's obvious. Peter addresses that in 1 Peter 4, verses 3 and 4. He says, we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, abominable idolatries. In regard to these things, they think it's strange that you not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you. I'll admit, and I'm not proud of it, when I was a teenager, I got in with the wrong crowd, drinking, carrying on and so forth, doing things that when I think about them, it embarrasses me. Then the best thing that ever happened to me, or one of the best things I should say, that ever, I got a job working nights, and I couldn't run with that crowd anymore. And that was good. And even better, on that job, I met a Christian, and he taught me the gospel, and I obeyed the gospel. But you know, that former crowd that I worked with, they were exactly like these people in 1 Peter chapter 4. They couldn't understand why I didn't want to do those things anymore, and they would ridicule me. But fortunately, my job working nights minimized the amount of time that I had to associate with them or had any opportunity to do so. But sin arises from peer pressure. And I've just listed some things on here. Young people, pleasing your date. You know, dates can put pressure on you to do things that are not right. Premarital sex, all kinds of things. Going to inappropriate movies, drinking, using drugs, whatever. Pleasing your friends. Again, I had the wrong friends. They wanted to influence me to do wrong things. Pleasing your team members and coaches, even if you don't do things like drinking and smoking and so forth, can be a lot of pressure from team members and coaches. For example, you know, you need to be at practice today. Well, today's Wednesday and we have Bible study on Wednesday night. Or, you know, we have a game today. You need to be at the game. Well, we have a gospel meeting at church. So there's going to be a lot of pressure brought to bear. The desire to be popular. When I was a youngster, it was called being in the in crowd. I don't know if they use that expression anymore. There's a lot of pressure to do those things that those people do. Some otherwise very good kids have been influenced by peer pressure to do some very terrible things, even crimes like murder. So we need to be careful. Again, people will do things in a group setting that they would never do in a million years on their own. Bad habits formed early in life due to peer pressure can affect you for the rest of your life. Again, things like smoking and drinking, doing drugs, cursing. And on my screen I have cursing / Ebonics and Coach Lewis. When I was we lived in Florida, I helped coach high school basketball team, and all of the kids on the team were black. The coach was black. And Coach Lewis was an amazing person. To give you an example, when practice would begin, all of the team members, they would go put on their practice uniforms. They would come out into the gymnasium, and the standard thing was to shoot free throws. And these kids would be shooting free throws, and you know, they'd be kind of yucking it up and having fun. And to give you an idea what Coach Lewis was like, when he walked in the gym, he didn't say one word. But when he made that first step into the gym, you could hear a pin drop. This man had a presence about himself that was really something. And he also taught English, which is kind of unusual for a coach. But anytime he would hear a group of the players, you know, using slang or Ebonics and so forth, I mean, they didn't want to get caught doing that, because he would punish them by making them, you know, run suicides or something like that. And I always remember he would always make the point that, you know, if you have to resort to cursing to express your ideas, that you're a pretty ignorant person. And then on the Ebonics thing, he would always say, you know, are you going to go to a job interview and talk like that? And it was amazing, you know, you could be around these kids and you would think, well, they must not be able to talk in any other way. But when he would come down on them, it was amazing how well spoken they could be when they would put their mind to it. So it was good that he was trying to break those bad habits that they were developing. So if we never start a bad habit, then we never have to break it. In Jeremiah 17, the sin of Judah is written with a pen of iron. With the point of a diamond, it is engraved on the tablet of their heart. These people had got in such a deep rut with sin. And when we get in that deep rut, those habits can be very hard to break, even later in life. Well, now I'm going to talk just a short period of time about the adults. We are not immune to peer pressure ourselves. Again, back to the workplace. Over the years, I've seen a lot of cheating and stealing going on in the workplace. And there's a lot of pressure brought to bear, you know. turn me in, this sort of thing. Another one that I've seen over the years is people that don't give a full day's work for a full day's pay. You know, when we get that paycheck, basically what we have told our employer is that we've earned that. And we need to make sure that we really did earn that. Other things, missing services to fulfill other obligations, be it in the workplace. Maybe we're in a service club. I know in Michigan I was interested in joining the Rotary Club, but there were several things that they did that conflicted with church services. So finally I just said, you know, I can't participate. But there were some people in that club that, you know, they just couldn't understand that. You know, to them, the Rotary Club came first. Also, socializing with our coworkers. I know some places I've worked, after work, the people that worked there would go out from time to time and go to a bar for happy hour. And if you didn't participate in that, you know, they would wonder what in the world was wrong with you. And I know of one preacher told me one time that I think it was his son-in-law. He worked at a place where that was really expected of people. And law had worked in the position that he worked in for like 10 or 15 years and had all of these glowing reports over the years of his good job performance. And then it came time for a promotion, and lo and behold, a guy that had only been there a few months got the promotion, and he was passed over. And of course, you know, a lot of excuses were made, but probably it was due to the fact that he wouldn't socialize with those people in those ways. Another thing is what I would call water cooler talk. You know, people on their breaks, unfortunately, in some settings, want to, again, tell dirty jokes, dirty stories, tell about all of their great sexual escapades and all kinds of things like that. And obviously, we cannot be involved in such. So how are we going to overcome peer pressure? We need to remember who we are to fear. We're to fear God. Jesus said, "My friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. But I will show you to whom you should fear. Fear him who, after he is killed, has the power to cast into hell. Yes, I say, fear him." You know, the chief rulers forgot that in John chapter 12. A lot of them believed in Jesus, but they feared being cast out of the synagogue. Certainly Peter, Barnabas, and other Jewish Christians forgot that in Galatians 2 when they caved in to peer pressure and separated themselves from the Gentiles. So we need to imitate Paul. For example, Galatians 1 and verse 10, he says, "For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ." So, pleasing men should be something that is a byproduct of, first of all, pleasing God. And if that happens to please men, so be it. If it doesn't, it as well. So again, choose our companions wisely. You know, Jesus associated with sinners, for example, in Matthew chapter 9. But what was his purpose in associating with them? The purpose was to teach them. So we need to be careful as we associate with sinners. Why are we making that association? How long will they associate with us if we try to teach them the gospel? I'm afraid that most of the times it won't be for very long. So if your friends are not concerned with your eternal soul, then they're not your friends, really. Also, be careful where you go. "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners." Many times weak Christians will place themselves in danger by the places that they go. And it's, the solution is simple. If there's danger there that we're going to be tempted to sin, then we shouldn't go there. And I would address this again to young people. As you are going to school and choosing your career, as you are interviewing with a potential employer, one thing that you mustn't forget is this job going to provide me with a work environment that's going to be conducive to me being a Christian? Or is it going to place a lot of roadblocks and temptations in my way? Also in that regard, especially if it's taking you to another city, is there a faithful congregation in that place that I can worship with? Not is there just a congregation there, is it a faithful congregation? And not only is it a faithful congregation, is it a congregation that I can go to and be an important part of that congregation to really contribute to the work there? Because, you know, in my career, we have moved around in quite a different places. There's been times we've moved where there's a faithful congregation, but there was nothing there much for me to do. And you don't grow in that kind of a situation. So think about those things as you're making your choice, not only for a potential employer, but for your career in general. Is the career that I'm choosing, is it one that's going to help me or hurt me as I seek to be a Christian? Then to overcome peer pressure, obviously we need to learn the Word of God. How did Jesus overcome temptation? It is written. How do we confront temptation? Psalm 18, verse 11. Your word I've hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you. We need to grow in virtue as well. 2 Peter 1, verse 5. But also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. If we do that and this abounds in our life, then we are going to be fruitful and heaven will be our home. Virtue is the idea of moral excellence. It's interesting that the word virtue actually comes from the word for valor. So it's the idea of having moral and spiritual courage. Courage to do what is right simply for the fact that it's the right thing to do. There might not be any reward in it, in the here and the now. In fact, there might be negative things that'll happen to us, but we do the right thing simply because it's the right thing to do. And we need to assemble regularly. We talked about that at the beginning. Why do we assemble? We assemble so that we can have positive peer pressure on one another, that we can encourage and exhort one another. Hebrews 3:18, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. So we need to assemble regularly. We need to do all that we can to encourage one another. We need to form strong friendships with fellow Christians, people of like and precious faith, because that is going to provide us with encouragement to grow and be better. Well, I went a little bit long in this lesson, but I think it's an important one. We are admonished by God to keep His commandments. Why? Because God is going to bring every work into judgment. Every secret thing is going to be made, whether it's good or whether it's evil. If we reject Jesus, if we reject His teaching, He said, he who rejects me and does not receive my word has that which judges him. The word that I've spoken will judge him. So we need to have the moral and spiritual courage to please God rather than men. And the payoff is great. First of all, when we cave into peer pressure, what are we? We're nothing but spineless jellyfish rather than strong Christians. And when we do that, you know, we're going to be hanging our heads and our conscience will bother us. But if we show the moral and spiritual courage that we should, then then we're not going to be caving into peer pressure, and we can hold our head high and know that we're in elite company. In Acts 6 and verse 7, I always admired these people, because there had to be a tremendous amount of peer pressure on them not to be obedient. Acts 6 and verse 7 says, "The word of God increased, and the number of the disciples multiplied in Jerusalem greatly. And a great company of the priests were obedient to the faith." Can you imagine the amount of peer pressure that was exerted on those men not to be obedient to the faith? More than we could ever imagine. But they did not give in, and we should not give in as well. Well, that's our lesson for this evening. If you're here tonight and you need in any way to respond to God's invitation, we want to encourage you as we stand and sing the song.
When the trumpet of the Lord shall sound.